You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss a single episode. And if you like the show and think we deserve a 5-star rating, and obviously we do, rate us and post a review. Also, although our main purpose in life is to entertain you, producing this show costs actual money, so please help out by going to patreon.com/GilbertGottfried and pledging your support to receive all sorts of goodies, merchandise, personalized roast, and shout-outs, advanced access to episodes, or personal messages from me, Gilbert Gottfried. And if we raise enough, maybe I can finally get a new co-host. I'm thinking of the Scarlett Johansson robot. This is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, once again at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Furterosa. Our guests this week are comedians, writers, and podcast hosts who met way back in Monsignor Farrell High School. Right here in New York, and went on to co-star in the sketch and improvisational comedy troupe The Tenderloins, after winning the $100,000 grand prize on NBC's It's Your Competition. They, along with fellow troupe members Joe Gatto and James Murray, launched the wildly popular TV series Impractical Jokers. Now in its fifth season, their show, which the New York Times called gleefully idiotic, has not only inspired spin-off versions in such parts of the world as Greece, Brazil, Belgium, Mexico, and Sweden, but they recently returned from a sold-out arena tour in the UK, coming just a few months after a sold-out engagement at Radio City Music Hall. Please welcome to the podcast our two favorite members of the Impractical Jokers, and also the only ones to accept our invite, Rosie O'Donnell's Doppelganger.
Doppelganger.
I say duple. Rosie O'Donnell's Doppelganger, Brian Q. Quinn, and Sal Ja Crispy Volcano.
Wow. I can't believe you did that off the top of your head.
Yeah.
You knew all that.
I just remembered it.
Unbelievable.
Wow. It's Volcano, isn't it?
Volcano.
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 Volcano. Volcano.
Yeah.
He's one of mine.
Oh, okay.
Smith.
Now we're starting at with a sad announcement.
Yeah.
You want to be the one to tell
No,
them?
It's your show, man.
Okay.
With a heavy heart.
It seems in the old show, Alf, The guy that played the furry alien creature was a midget, as I like to call him.
The guy that played Alf.
Yes.
Yeah, didn't do the voice. Didn't do the voice. Just was inside the...
Yeah, Paul Fusco did the voice.
That's frustrating. Yeah.
So
this was just the actor inside the outfit, inside the costume.
The actor inside, the midget inside the outfit, which was known as Alf.
Michu Mezeros was his name.
Gordon Shumway was Alf's real name.
Correct.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah,
from Melmac. Melmac.
Yeah. Right. I remember the cartoon.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But Masuki, whatever.
Mishu.
Mishu has sadly passed away of a heart attack.
I believe a stroke.
A stroke at 75 or 76.
Close enough.
I do hope in the Oscars this year they have Al in the
memorial.
Yeah, that would be good.
They don't show his photo. They show the bump.
Alf. Yeah.
I never liked Alf.
No.
I always thought it's like that they were making a puppet of a dog. And they fucked it up, so they said, let's change it to an alien. Yeah.
That's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
And that's what put you off for the whole series.
Yeah, it threw me.
You couldn't get over that.
We also have to talk a little bit about the Jeffersons, because I had our researcher, Paul Rayburn, called you to do a little pre-interview.
Yes.
And I got the material back, and the first thing I saw was that your favorite show and your influence growing up was the Jeffersons.
That's right, yeah.
Which was a pleasant surprise.
Frank and I interviewed James Caron, who's an old character actor. If you look him up, you'll recognize him right away. He played in a very important Jeffersons, maybe one without the music at the end.
Yes.
Because it was so important. A white supremacist.
I think I do. He was Mr.
Flutterman in Gremlins.
Yes.
One and two.
Oh, no, that's Dick Miller.
Oh, what did you say? Okay.
Oh, he was in Return of the Living Dead.
James Caron.
That's right.
He was Frank the Grave Digger.
Right. In one and two. They brought him back in the second one.
And you guys grew up in New York. He was the ShopRite. Not ShopRite, Pathmark.
That's right.
And so after he did that show,
he got Pathmark.
Yeah.
Pathmark.
On brand. Pathmark hates black people.
Yeah. Not just black people. They don't like Jews either. They do not like Jews.
The chairman of Pathmark.
But their prices are, you can't beat them. You can't beat the prices. So
it's
forgivable.
We hate blacks and Jews, but we've got orange shoes for that price.
Well, I'm a white Catholic, so I'm just going in for the savings. I don't need to worry about that stuff.
That's right.
But so he played a white supremacist, and I guess he did it so realistically that he was getting death threats, and people weren't hiring him, and they were threatening to kill him and blow up the studio.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Isabel Sanford and Sherman Hemsley had to escort him out of the building. They had to escort him to safety. He had to walk with the stars.
Oh, you mean, that shows a level of ignorance that I can't believe exists.
It just goes to show you how many fucking dopes are in the world that they can't make.
Studio audience that are watching the scripted show.
I think I got the story
took
right.
Umbrage
he had
with
to
his
walk
performance.
Out with them, right?
But then eventually, they really helped him out. They took a picture where they were all standing with their arms around each other, smiling. And the important ending, James Caron, who's the head white supremacist, starts to have a seizure.
Oh, okay.
And
I remember this.
He falls down to the ground, and Sherman Hemsley performs mouth-to-mouth on him.
Now it's ringing a bell.
I completely remember it now.
And then when he says, this man saved your life, he goes, you should have let me die, son.
Yep.
Now, you used to act these scripts out for your family at the dinner table?
I did. Not those. Uh-huh. Not the heavy. I completely remember this episode now. The thing I love about the Jeffersons, too, is that, like, more so than any shows today, even though, like, they're in front of live studio audiences, you can feel, like, they still feel like canned laughter. The Jeffersons, or whatever the process was in the older sitcoms, you feel that audience watching that. It's almost like they're watching a play, and it's not cut up so much because you could tell they're listening and watching that exact thing.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? I remember that one. I used to watch the Jeffersons all the time because it was on from like 75 to like mid-80s. And they used to replay it on Channel 11 every night. And I used to watch it. I used to live with my grandparents. Me and my grandpa used to watch it and just howl laughing at it. So I would memorize. I would like write down like some scenes and then I would perform them at dinner for them. And I would like play all the characters. But it was more like the lighthearted scenes.
Not the very special episodes.
No, not the very special. It was not the very special. It was more like the, like when George and Florence would like go at each other and like rip on each other and stuff.
Can
like
you
that.
Act out a scene for us now?
Yeah, I could probably remember one.
Okay.
Oh, this is
I mean, it'll
treat.
Be short. I don't know if I can do it, the whole scene.
That's fine.
I remember one specific. I remember one specific, one specific jab back and forth between Florence and George. George, you know, I don't know if you didn't watch the show.
Yeah.
Florence was the housekeeper.
Marla
and
Gibbs.
Yes.
Marla Gibbs.
Yeah. Yes.
And George and her had a peculiar rapport where George was. He loved her, but he was basically always unsatisfied with her. And to his to play devil's advocate, she wasn't a good mate on the show.
No.
That was the whole shtick. So they would always take verbal jabs at each other. And I remember one time George said, Florence, your cooking tastes like dog food. And then she came back with a classic Florence retort.
Yeah, you're supposed to do a Sherman Helmsley.
So he'd be like, "Oh, I used to walk like him too. I used to also do these in third grade. I used to come into third grade and then do them in front of the class.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I've lost a step.
Yes,
admittedly, Florence, Florence, your cooking tastes like dog food. And then she said, "That's 'cause I'm cooking for a Chihuahua." And we laughed and laughed. You know.
Oh, that's funny. That's not,
yeah. We've done 110 shows, and no one's ever done a Marla Gibbs impression.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, when I was a kid, my uncle and I would act out the Different Strokes episode where Dudley got molested in the bike shop. I was Dudley.
We talked about that.
Yeah, and he played the bike shop owner. It was great. I don't really remember the dialogue.
Put you in leopard underwear and stuff.
Now, I remember working with a director who told me he used to direct the Jeffersons. And one time he was out having lunch and he was walking back to the studio and a limo passes by and the window goes down and smoke is coming out of it. And Sherman Helmsley is there and he says, "Hey, want to lift back to the studio?" And he goes, "Sure." And he gets in and he's smoking a hash pipe. Or smoking crack. He might have been smoking crack.
Allegedly.
And, and so the director says to him, he goes, "Hey, should you be doing that? You know, we have to film today." And he goes, "I gotta kiss her twice in this episode."
Oh, man.
Oh, that's great.
Did you really hear that story?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
I like the variable, too. Is either hash or crack? Like one or the other.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
I like
funny.
That he has to smoke crack to get through two kisses.
And since he's such a Jefferson's aficionado, tell him the Paul Benedict story, because that's good, too.
Oh, my God.
Bentley.
I've met Paul Benedict.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
The late Paul Benedict.
Yeah.
He was one time years ago doing a play. And when he got off stage, someone said, "Oh, some doctor wants to come over and talk to you." And he thought, "Oh, he wants an autograph or something." And he meets the doctor, and the doctor says, "I was watching you on stage, and I think you might have acromegaly." And that's that disease that Rondo Hatton had.
You guys know Rondo Hatton?
No.
You'll know him after this.
Yeah, you will recognize him. You've seen his mask.
The creeper.
Is this like a gigantism type of disease?
Yes.
Like,
Yeah. So his features are big, and his hands and feet and legs, they look like, you know, like Frankenstein.
Right.
Yeah.
And he says, "I think you might have acromegaly." And he examined him, and sure enough, he did.
Wow.
Did you ever see The Rocketeer? The movie The Rocketeer? You're a superhero guy.
The old Disney movie?
Yeah.
The guy is made up. The bruiser. Oh, that's him?
It's made up to look like the way this guy looked in real life. I swear to God, if you look up Rondo Hatton, you will recognize seeing masks of him on every Halloween. in store windows.
Rocketeer was dope. Yeah, that was a good movie.
I've recommended
it.
Is that
Jennifer Connelly?
Jennifer Connelly, Billy Campbell, and Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
Oh, Jennifer Connelly's a Jew.
Okay, good. Okay. Get that out there.
I used to be a toll collector at the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel for a summer one year, and she would come through every other day. She would come through, and I was like, I just fell in love with her every goddamn time. So sweet, so nice, so beautiful.
And there I was, insane, in a toll collector. Insane body.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Because I had the advantage of, like, I was standing and she was sitting.
Yes.
I didn't want to say that, so you brought it out, but yeah.
I have a movie recommendation for you, The Hot Spot.
Hot Spot. She and another hot-looking girl are lying out on the beach naked.
I think it's Virginia Madsen.
I've seen the clip online.
Yeah.
They're by a lake, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I saw Requiem for a Dream. I love that movie.
Now, the first time I saw her was in that movie with Frank Whalen. I think it's called Opportunity Knock.
They got locked in a
Target. She's wearing the white tank top, and she's just
riding that ride.
The whole time.
John Hughes
Jesus
movie,
Christ Almighty.
Yeah. So what else did you guys watch? You grew up here. You're local guys. You grew up in Staten Island. What did you watch as kids? Besides I know you're a fan of the old Batman.
That became like a religion for me at a certain point, and then. I loved it. It was obsessed as a child, and then that's what got me into comics was the old Batman series.
Batman.
Absolutely, 100%. And I'm a huge, like, that's my thing is comics. And when they re-released it, I think 2 years ago, finally they got the rights.
They finally came out on Blu-ray. They couldn't get the rights
for Blu-ray for years and years. Yeah. I've watched the series through about three times.
They look good in Blu-ray, don't they?
You can't even believe what you're seeing. You see the seams on the costumes.
I know.
I love it. And I didn't realize, like, how much of a comedy it was as a kid. Like, now I'm like,
you must have seen it in, like, 20th run. You're much younger than we are. You must have seen it
I was born in 76, so I guess Channel 11 ran it
Channel
in the
11.
80s.
Now, are you familiar with the legend of the Joker from Batman?
Cesar Romero?
Yes.
What legend? I have a story about him, but what legend?
Okay. Well, I don't know if I've ever told this one on the show before, but Cesar Romero.
This is our greatest hit.
He was famous for being a Latin lover on screen. And in real life, he was gay. And what he was into was gathering up these young boy toys, and he would pull down his pants and underwear, and according to legend, they would fling orange wedges at his ass.
That's so specific.
Yeah.
It's alleged.
Some people have argued it's tangerine wedges.
Right.
Another guy said he would stand
allegedly orange wedges.
Yeah, ankle deep in warm water as they were throwing orange
wedges.
Sounds
like an
inside
clown posse bus.
I don't know. I don't know when you wake up one day and go, hey, you know what would feel
deep
good?
In warm water. Very specific. I just want to leave here having an understanding of this. Don't send me out the door right now with just this amount of information.
Don't say the show's not educational, Sal.
Is it something that I'm not aware of? What does the ankle deep in warm water do?
God, what does orange wedges against your ass do?
Oh, you don't know that one?
It gives your ass vitamin C.
Oh, absolutely.
Now we'll get right back to this, but I have to talk about a story.
Wait a minute. He's got to see
I can't believe you're right.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
No, I
mean, I'm sorry.
I'm
no,
not
go
ready
right.
to move on.
No, no.
I'm not ready
well,
to
move on. Well, hold on, because my story
I
might,
like the host
might
of
compliment
TV show.
This one.
We'll get right back after this.
You might have just blown the a guy in Albuquerque. You might have just blown the lid off one of my grandmother's stories because she told me, my grandmother on my father's side, as a young woman, worked at Ellis Island.
Oh.
And Cesar Romero, before he became famous, worked there with her.
Wow.
And she told me she dated him for a summer.
Mm.
So now.
This is a scoop.
Tell me that old bitch lied to me.
Well, either she lied to you or she was throwing orange wedges at his ass.
Okay.
In warm water.
She had bursitis.
I will tell you that old bitch lied.
Yeah, I like the idea of her throwing orange wedges.
You're like, now that you mention it, there was a lot of citrus around the house.
Wow.
It stunk of orange juice.
Wow, because I always watched the show and was like, that could have been my grandfather, but now I have mixed emotions about it.
Where were you going with this?
I just wanted a sidetrack for a second that I heard when the Impractical Jokers check into a hotel, there is...
I can't wait to hear what you're about to say next.
There is one practical joke you play on one of the members, where they're distracted? Can you tell us? Okay.
This is on Sal. This is Joe on Sal. Yes.
This is something Joe did to me. I don't even want to. It hasn't happened in a long while.
It
hasn't happened
in,
I want to say, two years.
Yeah.
But it happened plenty the first 2 years. We've been touring for 4 years.
Yes.
After post show, we've been touring. He would. Okay.
We would distract Sal.
When we check in, they would you never think your head is not here when you're checking into a hotel.
No.
You're getting off the thing, you're getting your luggage together, you're waiting, maybe the room's ready, maybe it's not, whatever. They would distract me. Joe would get my keys to my room and he would race up to my room in that moment while I was being distracted and thought I was waiting on my room. And he would turn the heat up as high as it can go. And then take a shit in the toilet, leave it there, and come back out and leave the heat on and the shit in the toilet. And then they used to give me my keys, and I would swing the door open, and it felt like someone threw shit at me on the equator. That's what it would have kind of felt like. And he got me like 7 or 8 times over the course of 2 years. Because just when it leaves you, just when you forget about it. And let me tell you, that's a tainted room right there.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
And now back to the show. Since we're talking about stunts, and I guess that's sort of considered a punishment, although it's not part of the exactly. show. Was there a stunt that got you guys in trouble with Homeland Security?
Oh, I'll let you take this one.
Well, it wasn't so much really. We shot down at the not City Hall.
Battery Park.
They have the Indian Museum over there.
Right, right.
Or you could say Indian. And it was, they have the two statues.
The Indian Museum.
I don't know. It's a Native American museum. And there's these two statues. Oh, and in a bit, Sal just ran up there and we stupidly said, just grab that Indian's nose off the statue. So he goes, got your nose. Somebody came over and was like, hey, you guys shouldn't be on the statue. And that was the end of that. But we spun it into this thing where Homeland Security got furious about it. And wrote this letter saying, hey, what you guys did isn't cool because that's a national landmark and you guys are on TV. And if you do that, other people will do it. Have some responsibility. Also, we're going to fine you. We need you to come in for basically a court hearing about it. And it was all fake. We hired an actress. We wrote the letter.
I see.
And so
they hired an actress. They hired a whole team.
Yeah.
It was a floor of Homeland Security.
Well, it was where they shoot Law and Order, those offices. We took over those offices and populated it with actors playing lawyers and stuff like that. And Sal came in and we hid cameras in there and we called him on the, had this woman and we told her, like, be a bitch to him. And we knew he couldn't come back at her too hard. So he sat there with the frustration on his face while she did it. Said she was going to fine him. Said she was going to.
This carried on for months.
Months.
Six, I was getting letters to my home. $100,000 fine. 6 months in prison. All this stuff. And I went there and I thought I was going to settle it that day. And she's like, yeah, this is not going to be settled right now. And they kept it going and going
right.
and going.
And we said we were going to pull the permit to shoot Impractical Jokers in New York City if you don't comply. So he had to comply.
Interesting.
It was great.
Yeah. And that's so for like 6 months, I thought that this is not the normal routine on the show. The normal routine is just very much more simple interactions with people in the public. So this was a little bit in depth. So it wasn't on my radar that they were doing something like this.
Were you slapped once by a woman?
Yes.
Because I think Gilbert would. I think Gilbert would actually enjoy this
on
one.
The show or in real life.
On the show,
because I requested in real life.
I don't want to get too personal.
In the pilot, it never aired because we were still figuring out the tone of the show.
Right.
And in the show, we don't really get too mean. It's more about we want to mortify each other. This collateral reactions from.
Well, that's one of the charms of the show is that you guys have an affection for each other and it doesn't get mean spirited.
Hopefully, yeah, by design. But when we first figured out, we shot the pilot and I sat next to a woman who had a newborn infant in the park and I struck up a conversation with her. And then they told me to turn to her and say, if I could just be honest with you, it's a very ugly child. And so.
Told you'd like it.
So I turned to this woman, this young mother.
Oh, she was gorgeous.
After I
Remember
talked to her for like 5 minutes,
was?
I'm like, you know, and I should have not said it. But I told her that the baby, I was like, this is, you know, it's an ugly baby. And she said, excuse me. I said, the baby is an ugly baby. And she hauled off, she hit my face so hard that it spun and spit flew out of it. And it was
like a raging bull.
Her handprint was on my face.
Wow.
And I was just like in complete shock. And but she had a good sense of humor about it.
She was fine, yeah.
And she was so
So beautiful. Oh, like stunning. I mean, we remember her 5 years
ago.
Yeah,
later. I was like, oh my
God. She was French accent, remember? Yeah. Oh God.
But I got choked once by a war vet. Because I cut him in line. So we went to, you ever see the TKTS ticket booth in Times Square?
Sure.
It's where tourists in New Yorkers, they line up at like noon because at 3 o'clock, a box office opens that represents all the theaters and you get tickets at half price for that day. So thousands of people line up and they wait 3 hours on this line, 3 hours plus. So we had the thing, okay, we're all going to go there and see who can cut the line the deepest in. And get and cut the most of the line. And so we all took turns, and I cut in front of this guy with his family. He was an older gentleman, big guy, white-haired gentleman. And he was like, you know, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, nothing, you know. And he's like, no, get out of the line. We were here first. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm just making believe I don't understand him or whatever. And he's like, what is going on? And he's like, I'm going to tell you right now, get off the line. And I was like, oh, thanks. It's great to see you, meet you. You know, and so he calls security over. And security comes over and goes, what's the issue? And he goes, this guy just cut us in line. We've been waiting for hours. I want him out of the line. I turned to security. Because if I get kicked out, I lose.
Oh,
so I turned to security. I said, he's just messing with you. It's my crazy uncle. We're a family. I'm with them. And the guy got incensed. He goes, what are you, some kind of nut? And I said, no. He goes, something wrong with you? I said, no. Tell him. Tell him that we're family and you're just joking around. And the guy, I just saw a switch flip and he shoved the security guard away, lunged at me and just started choking me by the neck. And his whole family got in between and he just wouldn't let me go. And I was like, oh my God. And then it turns out he was, of course, a war vet and he just didn't take any shit.
The wrong guy to fuck with on this line.
Yeah. But again, that doesn't happen too often.
I was going to ask that question. I mean, how often do you guys actually feel fear for your safety?
Not really. I actually have two broken ribs right now from a guy who tackled me while we were shooting about 3 weeks ago.
What happened?
It's for our live show. We tour as a live show. Gilbert, you saw us on the cruise. Or you didn't see us, but
I was on your
Impractical Jokers.
That's right, how you guys hooked up.
Yeah.
And so we shoot videos just for the live shows. And one of them was, we're going to have a creep-off contest to see who could be creepiest. And I wore one of those ghillie suits that snipers wear. So you're like, you know, it's a bush. And there was a Little League game playing. And the idea was I was going to creep as close to the pitcher's mound as I can get on this Little League game. And it was going fine. It was growing great. The coach came out. He was pissed, which I understand because you don't know who the hell I am under the thing or what I have on me. He starts kicking dirt on me. And then I got up and I start going, I'm a bush. It's okay. I'm just a bush. You don't see me. And I started darting to the infield and he shoves me and I recovered and took off again. And he just full on tackled me. And I went down so hard and I was like, God, this hurts. And I went to the doctor. I have two, possibly three broken ribs from a guy who flipped
out. Occupational hazard.
I remember I got you invited me on the Impractical Joker.
Yeah, well, you're one of our heroes, man.
Oh, thank you.
That is true.
That's just sad.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. They were like, our manager came to us and were like, make a dream list of comedians that you want on the cruise. And Gilbert was one of the first ones that we came up with. He was the only one that said yes from that list. So we're pretty excited. We're pretty excited.
Right away, too. Right away.
Almost as if he was waiting for the call.
Was there food?
Yeah.
There was free food.
Yeah.
I remember meeting you, too, on the this is terrific. I was like, oh, hello. Oh, because I had met you a little bit before the cruise backstage at another comedy show. But I don't know if you remember that. But when I met you on the cruise, I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, even just hearing you read that intro that we had, it's crazy to me.
Yeah,
and it's like for us, it's iconic. You're iconic. So and so I digress. So but when I met you on the cruise, I was like, oh, and you had a documentary you were filming.
Oh yes.
I hope that went. I was going well.
Yeah. Still
so
going well.
I was like, oh, hello, thank you so much. Blah blah blah. And the first thing you said to me was, is there any way I could do less time? And I said, "Oh well, you know, I don't know what the contract says, but whatever you think, how much less time? Like, you know,
like he's like, I just want to enjoy.
I'm thinking he has to do an hour, and I said, how much less time? Like 45. This isn't even for me to. I don't know. I go, how much less time? 45. He's like, if I can do 10 to 15 minutes, that would be great.
It was so funny because our manager was like, this has to be a family-friendly cruise. Like, you know, can Gilbert, is Gilbert family-friendly? And we're yeah, he's the parrot. We're like, he's the duck. He's the best. Gilbert gets on stage, and within 2 seconds, he's doing a joke about Nipsey Russell sucking down gum. And my manager's looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? And we're like, but it's Gilbert Godfrey. We love him.
And then, of course, anything Gilbert wants, right? So I'm like, okay, I'll have someone talk to you, and we'll figure it out. I just want, you know, I need Jesus. And then he was like, this is all in the first 40 seconds. And then he goes, yeah, I just don't want to be on the boat.
He's like, Nipsey Russell sucking a cock.
And then he turned to the newest comedian that was booked on that boat, my friend JF, who's a young comedian who had a couple of 15-minute slots. He says, you want to open for me and do a half hour?
That's him.
That was great.
I was like, this couldn't have gone better.
It was perfect.
You know what I mean? It's exactly what I mean.
But you got into it because then you were just like, you just wandered into other people's podcasts. There was my buddy Brian Johnson was hanging out with you. And they would, like, we booked podcasts, and Gilbert just went backstage. Like, he wasn't scheduled. The people hosting the podcast didn't know. Gilbert just walks on stage and sits down at the table 30 minutes into the show.
Yeah, he did that with us too, Legion of Skanks.
Oh, my God, it was so funny.
He just crashed the show.
And that was it. They loved it, though. Yeah, everybody loved it. It was great.
I love you selling your manager on the idea that he's family-friendly.
Yeah, well, like, no, it's Iago, man. Everybody, kids are going to love him. He'll do the voice.
What's the Nipsey Russell bit? And then my
manager's like, does anybody even know who Nipsey Russell is?
No, during our podcast, tried to seduce a child in the front row by offering to introduce him to old actors. You remember this?
Yes! Yes!
He was dangling an old actor carrot in front of like a 7-year-old kid. He's like, come on with me backstage. I'll introduce you to
yeah. I said, hey, you want to meet Captain Kangaroo?
Oh, that's so funny.
I'm good friends with Captain Jack McCarthy.
You guys are too young to remember Captain Jack McCarthy.
No, I don't remember him at all.
Oh, that's Lord. Funny.
But it was exactly what we wanted.
Right.
Like, the whole thing was perfect.
All right, so you're a fan. I told you I had a surprise for you. You may already know this. You're a Superman fan.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, you're big time into Superman. Yeah, look at this. He's got a tattoo, Gil, on his arm. He's got the Superman insignia.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. Me and Joey Fatone have this. It's great.
You Shaq, Bon Jovi, and Joey Fatone.
Did you know that he did a voice? The boys know this?
Yes.
No.
On
you're about to be even more impressed.
Oh, I know. Mr. Mixelplex.
Yes.
I knew that. Yeah,
yes.
Of course. Yeah.
On the one that, his name? Tim Daly.
Yeah. He was Superman and Clark Kent. Yeah.
And I was Knick Knack, the crazed toy inventor, on that afternoon Superboy.
Yeah, the syndicated
Superboy. I did about
two or three series.
Oh, that I remember the series. I don't remember the episodes.
There you go.
But yeah, I remember you were Mixelplex. I do remember that.
Yeah,
that series was good. Oh, nice.
You have even more respect for him now?
I couldn't possibly have any more for him, but yeah.
And I co-wrote a Superboy.
Is there any way
and he shot
to
dreams.
Leave the boat now? And still get paid. Basically, I do not want to see you, any of you, again after this very moment.
What a career that you, like, not only do you do that, but you're loved for it. You know what I mean? That you're like, yes, he doesn't want to see us. He doesn't want to do what we hired him
I've
for.
I've never heard of you, actually. My wife books everything. This was a huge mistake.
She was like, you remember with the four fat idiots that talked to each other? And he's like, I don't know.
I went to shake his hand. He gave me his breakfast plate. I was like, no, it's my cruise. It's my cruise. Oh, great. You're just the person I wanted to talk to. This was a huge mistake.
Hilarious. How long did you stick it out? How long did you stay on the cruise? You went you did the whole cruise.
Yes.
You had a blast.
Yes.
We had a blast.
Yeah.
We went to
and all of that is true.
I'm sure.
We went to Mexico. We went to Mexico. Yeah.
I said, Gilbert, this is my mom. He said, oh, great. is there any way I can do less time to my mother?
Yes, my
That's great. My mom's like, oh, yeah, I don't know what he's talking about.
Did your mother know who he was?
Yeah, she knew who he was. Okay. She's like, sure.
That's
funny. Oh, my goodness.
Here's another one. God.
I'm sweating so much, I'm laughing so hard.
Here's another question about the show. Or we could just mock Gilbert for the rest of the hour.
Oh, God.
Did you guys do a stunt that involved, that caused a woman to call 911?
No. That didn't make air. That's a credit card one.
Oh, yeah. Is it that one or is that the child playground one?
Well, the chat didn't make air either.
Someone called 911. We had three calls to 911 in the tenure of the show. One, I was a supermarket checkout person, and they told me to take this woman's credit card, take a photo of it with my phone, and give it back to her. And I told her it was just for informational purposes, and I put the phone in my pocket, and she flipped out, you know, and she called the cops. Another time, we were on the beach. We were playing beach patrol, and what we would do is we'd find people who were sleeping on the beach, and we'd hover over their face and, like, crouch down, like crouch over them. So, like, our balls were, like, kind of near their face.
And we'd wake them up and, excuse me. But
when we did it, like, our crotch was right near their face. And one guy called the cops on us for that. And then another time we were in a children's playground, and the goal, we were without children. And the goal was to baby talk to adults. You know how they.
Well, I saw you throw the tantrum in the toy store.
That was another one.
Yeah, that was good.
Trying to get parents to buy us a toy as an adult. But they just all thought we were challenged adults, and that didn't work.
But sometimes they don't land.
So what we did was, in order to talk to the parents, like, oh, you know, we said, oh, an easier way to do it would be start that way with the kid and then transfer the conversation to the parents. But we never even thought it out. We didn't think that we were in the park without children. Yeah, and then we were going up to the kids going, men. Hello, little bit. And before we could even go to the parents, the cops were there. You know.
Yeah. We're lucky, though. Like, all three times.
All three, yeah.
The cops were fans of the show and were like,
that helps.
We love the show. Don't just get out of here. We know you're not doing anything wrong. So it was pretty good.
I was fond of Sal and in the dentist office. Trying to get the guy to say, oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, no, you do. Oh, yeah, yeah. The dentist was one of my favorite.
That's well, the chair things. Thing is just.
I raised them up in a chair. So we played dentists. So it's a challenge. The first thing you have to do is find a dentist to let you do this.
I was going to ask you. Yeah. That's a big task.
That's hard enough. And then you find the guy who's like, you know, just some fast and loose dentist that's like, come on in. It sounds great. Yeah. And then we're taking patients as a dentist before you know it. Now, here's the thing. We like to learn a couple of words, a couple of things to just establish even the slightest bit of credibility for a minute or two. Because otherwise, if they're suspicious within the first second, it doesn't work. So the dentist came in, and it was a brand new office, state-of-the-art everything. And they gave us a five-minute briefing on, oh, this is this tool, this does this. Here's a couple of keywords. And they said, this is a brand new state-of-the-art chair. So the guy, I went first. The guy came in, and and I get him in the chair, and they said, just put the chair up. Like, put him in the chair and put him down and the chair up. So I hit the thing. Well, this $20,000 state-of-the-art chair, I didn't realize, it went 9 feet in the air.
Pretty funny.
In the air. And it also flipped so that his feet were almost completely up, and his head was almost completely down. So I put him up. First, his head went all the way down to the floor and his feet up. And then I raised him up and he went about 9 feet in the air. His feet were touching the ceiling and his head, he was upside down. The guy almost fell backward.
And that little, that bib that's on you is just flopping over his face and he keeps moving it to talk to Sal.
Yeah, yeah. You see him just like going up and he keeps going. And then I just lost my shit. I laughed right in front of him. I had to walk out of the room.
What kind of challenge is it to get a professional like a dentist to take part in something like this? Is there...
In the beginning, it was harder.
A lot of
now it's fans of the show. Okay. Make our lives
so
easy.
Oh, I see. I see.
We can cast out a net now and say
we'll put on Facebook, right?
Yeah. But in the beginning, we had no crew, and we had to learn how to make a TV show. In the beginning, we had no crew. We had like
8 people.
Now there's like 50 people. In the beginning, I think there was 8.
8, and that included us calling for locations.
And we would call ourselves on the phone and be like, "Hi."
So it was guerrilla TV at the beginning. In the beginning. Now it's you got writers now.
We have writers. We have a bunch of guys who most of them are friends we've known for years. Guys, a lot of them are Staten Island guys. They sort of grew up with the same attitude. Some of them even went to the same high school as us. So we try and keep the continuity of our, you know, specific point of view in it. But, you know, we still write for the show, too, but it's a lot of work.
Now, if I can take you out of this for one second.
Take it out.
On Good Times, I imagine you probably like Good Times if you like the Jeffersons.
I have Good Times trivia for you.
Okay. Now, do you remember the episode where the father on Good Times dies?
Right?
John Amos dies.
Wasn't that one of the last episodes?
I think it was when they wrote him out of the show.
They wrote him out of the show. Like
contract dispute.
They write it that the character dies. And the wife.
Esther Rolle.
Florida
Evans.
Is being the brave widow and keeping the family together and acting like it doesn't bother her until the very end of the show when she's washing a bowl and she's...
I know what you're about to do.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, do it.
Go ahead.
Is it damn?
Yeah.
Damn! 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 Damn!
Is that it?
That's it! Yeah! Damn! Damn! Damn!
Yes.
Yeah, and that was like the credits went up silently.
Because there's a line in my trivia question. I have.
Yeah.
That I
okay.
Always
well,
throw
Frank, let's see. Frankie, you'll queue up what you want.
There's a line in the song. That no one knows what it is. I know
is it
what
the one that sounds like Hanging in a John?
That is the one.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's what I thought it was when I was a kid. Then I realized it made no sense.
What is it?
Well, you want to listen and try and guess?
Are you going to play the music?
Do we have Good Times?
I got it right here.
Oh.
We do.
Okay.
Here comes the trivia.
The mystery will be solved.
Will be solved. Put to rest.
Good time. Good time.
Great fucking theme song, by the way.
Great, isn't it?
It still sounds like Hanging in a John all these years later, and still doesn't make
any
sense.
I mean, you just want me to reveal it?
Yes.
Any guess at all?
You know, I knew, and then I forgot.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be anticlimactic.
No,
no. Go ahead.
Hanging in a chow line.
Hanging in a chow line.
Wow.
You know,
I don't think I did know that.
There were two other ones that I knew, but that no one knew. Well, one was way back, Car 54, Khrushchev doing
Idlewild.
Idlewild.
Do you know that show?
Sure.
Car 54.
Scout troop short a child, Khrushchev doing Idlewild.
He's due Car in 54. Idlewild, which was the previous name of JFK Airport.
Yeah, it was the airport. Up
And both those lines, scout troop short a child and doing Idlewild. And they both would mess
it
up.
You got it, Frankie?
Here you go.
There's a holdup in the Bronx. Brooklyn's broken out in fights. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights. There's a scout troop short a child. Khrushchev's doing Idlewild.
Car 54, where are you?
See?
Very good.
It was actually, there's a scout troop short a child, the one that no one knew.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Scout troop short a child.
Written by Charlotte Ray's husband.
Yes. Yes.
Mrs. Garrett.
And on All
Ray,
in the Family, the line no one knew was G.R.
Old
LaSalle
Rand
Gray.
I knew that.
They made Gene Stapleton re-record it
twice. Yes.
Because people wrote in. in season one and said, we don't, they got frustrated.
And then it became awful.
And then she enunciated it the third time.
And I remember it because then he goes, gee, our old LaSalle Grand Great.
Grandpa Al Lewis had a comedy club on Staten. We're still on Staten Island, Sal and I.
Uh-huh.
And he had a comedy club on Staten Island called the Grandpas.
Grandpas.
Oh, sure.
And he would hang out there. This is when we were in high school. I couldn't even legally drink, and I would go, and he wouldn't give a shit. And he was
Yeah, they
just,
had, like, non-drink night. They had, like, they
No, I but I went, it. Me and yeah. Tunes would go, and it yeah. was just, and, like, he was a fucking lunatic.
Oh, alone. God, God, him well. Yes.
Oh, you knew, oh, right, sure.
Yeah, I used to go to those brunches that Al Goldstein from Screw would throw these brunches, and I would quite often sit next to Al Lewis.
Oh, he was great.
And he'd wear like Western clothes.
Yeah, he had a bolo tie.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, he would wear that to the club. That's so funny. Yeah.
And like these Western shirts. And
he was great.
He'd smoke this horrible cigar.
He had a comedy, not a comedy club, excuse me. He had an Italian restaurant on Bleecker Street here.
Did he?
Called Grandpa's.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't at the on Staten Island all the time, but we would go and he'd be there sometimes and he'd be a trip, man.
Interesting dude. Ran for mayor.
Is that right?
Really? Yeah. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
Against who? Frank,
you have such a silky, chocolatey voice. It's unbelievable. I could listen to you read the phone book.
Thank you, Sal. I'm
really,
flattered.
It's really
we could
something
send
else.
You a recording of the voice and you could jerk off.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I mean, that too. Do you go around, do you listen to yourself? Do you hear it when you speak? Because I hear myself,
yeah,
I have horrible diction.
I'm self-conscious about it.
I'm a jumble. You're self-conscious about your perfect voice?
Well, thank you. You know, you always find
too.
The flaws.
I don't get it. What are you guys laughing at? I don't get it.
When you get into, like, let's say a fight with your wife, how do you...
Fuck you, bitch!
But it's hysterical.
She's cursed
they
out by a parrot.
They fuck you in the drive-thru. It's just like all I can think of. You know what I mean? It's like, how did she take that serious? Oh, my goodness.
God. What do you want me to ask? I can ask Q about...
Sounds like you.
I want to ask him about...
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead. It's your show.
At the risk of being sentimental... there was that episode where you throw Murr off a plane.
Yes.
And,
oh, the cry diving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Murr is thrown off a plane, screaming for his life, crying. And my son Max, who was 6 years old, saw that and he said, I want to be a skydiver from watching that episode. And he wrote this poem. My six-year-old son, Skydiving by Max Gottfried. Into the plane, flying like birds, my favorite part, jump out, fall down, flip, fall, and it is scary. Falling, spinning like a tornado. It's not safe, only for grown-ups. Exciting, elated, ecstatic, jump out, whoosh, fall, bump.
Well, that is one nice. Shit poem, huh? Doesn't your son know that poems are supposed to rhyme? What the hell is that? What are you teaching these kids?
Well, I kind of dig the
I mean,
ominous
Google
ending.
Poems.
Like, the ending is very ominous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, plop?
He
like,
dies
what is
at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's whoosh.
Let's get Max on the horn.
Bump.
Bump. Yeah. Well, that's what we were hoping was going to happen to Murray at the end of that episode. Unfortunately, the
that is
parachute
unbelievable
opened.
That he wrote that
How
from
old
seeing
is Max
our
now?
Show.
Yes.
Six? He's
yes.
six, and he knows
unreal.
Words like elated
yeah.
and ecstatic.
He's, wow. he was watching and
of course
practical
I'm kidding.
Jokes.
I mean, it was yeah. mediocre at least.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And he did all the artwork around it, too,
yes.
which you're leaving out.
Impressive.
That is unbelievable.
All right, here's something for...
I can't believe that.
Here's something for
at
Q.
Six, he's writing...
Because
yes.
you're into comic books and superheroes. Yeah.
Okay.
I was shitting in my hand and throwing it at six.
Six, I saw you do it last week.
Old habits die hard.
Superhero fan that you are.
Yeah.
Gilbert and I do a mini episode of this show on Thursday where we don't have guests. It's just the two of us riffing on shit. And
right.
We devoted an episode to something from the 70s. Called the Legends of the Superheroes.
Okay.
Comedy roast.
Are you familiar
with this?
Is this when they were dressed in costume?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I've seen it. I've seen clips of it. It's like they're dressed as the superheroes, like doing it, right?
Yes, it's truly dreadful.
Yeah, is it bad?
Oh, this ghetto man?
Yeah.
It's the worst thing you've ever seen.
It is scary.
They had him in years ago. That my comic shop, Secret Stash, sold bootleg copies of it, and we watched it. And it's a weird set, right?
It was like produced by Hanna-Barbera.
It looks like it's made for $2.
Yeah, that's
Adam West's in it. And Burt Ward.
I forgot all about that.
And then they bring in these comics like Charlie Callis and comics from
was
the
70s. Was it a proper roast?
It was like goofy.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah. But they had like Hawkman.
Jaw-dropping.
It was like, and as I recall, like the roast hit was like Stone. Like
yeah,
on
hosted
Asteroid.
By Ed McMahon.
Yeah, yeah, dude. Oh, wow.
Solomon Grundy's in it.
And he was just Grunt, right? Yeah, I remember that.
And
terrible.
Then what is it that one, is that part of it? There's one where, like, I think Batman and Robin, Solomon Grundy.
That's part one. That's the Legends of the Superheroes.
Station.
Yeah. It's a two-parter.
Yeah. He's at a gas station, and it's the clumsiest fight
And they have, like,
scene.
A laugh track, right?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It's just awful.
And then Batman and Robin just kind of walk away from the fight because they had no money for special effects.
It's got to be on YouTube. I got to look it up.
It's truly
it's something.
Awful.
Walt definitely has a copy of it. I'll get it for you. I remember we watched it. God, this is 15
so
years ago.
So it was for TV.
Yes.
Yes, in prime time.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a thing.
One of the greatest compliments I've ever gotten, we were interviewing Adam West, and Adam West said to me, he goes, you know, you would have made a great Penguin.
You would have made. I mean, the Burgess Meredith is hard to go against, but you would have been great.
He was so thrilled.
Oh,
Do you guys remember the Batman episode? Nobody ever recalls this one, and I just think it's like the best one for the wrong reasons.
Give me a shot.
Nora Clavicle?
Sure, that's the third season when the show jumped the shark.
Oh, God. Well, Batgirl ruined that show as far as I'm concerned, but holy crap. Did you ever hear about
it? Is that the one where she ties them in the human knot?
No, it was the one where this is Nora Clavicle's style. You're going to love this. Her plan was to make a bomb out of mice.
Oh, it's the Pied Piper thing with the mice.
Right.
Where they lead the mice out of Gotham City.
They fire all the male police officers. And they hire only women with the idea that they're going to be scared of mice. But it's the most sexist thing in the world because, like, crime is just going rampant because there's a sale at Macy's and all the cops are going to Macy's. That's all it is.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, jeez.
The bombs come in and they're like little mice going and they're all on the police cars screaming. Oh, wow. And it's fucking
amazing. It's season
amazing.
Three when they ran out of money.
Yeah.
The sets were gone. They would just
horrible.
Basically do things over a black backdrop.
Season three was a nightmare. Yeah. I didn't like Batgirl. I thought
it's pretty unwatchable.
I remember them walking up the side. You know, they always did that phony walking up the side of the wall. That even when you were two, you said, oh, they just turned the camera over.
What?
Nora Clavicle.
And one time, the window opened up and Jerry Lewis popped out.
Sure.
And I remember.
Well, they had all those cameos.
Yeah.
Lurch from the Addams Family popped out.
Oh, yeah.
Once. And Edward G. Robinson.
Oh, yes.
And all kinds. And Dick Clark.
And they would say their witty one-liners, and then they would dip back in.
Yeah.
But that episode, man, I wish they would air it.
Go back and watch that episode. She ties Batman, Robin, and
Batgirl. Oh, that's right. He had the twitch's ear.
In a human knot.
That's right.
That
and
they
he
had
goes,
to
Robin,
escape
if
from.
You move your right toe and I twitch my ear, and it just breaks.
Because they were out of money. They couldn't build any more props. They couldn't build a death trap.
That was
because
a
rough. Season three, they just pulled up, ABC just pulled
Why?
Up stakes on the show.
Why did they do that? It was a hit. It did well.
I think the numbers had dropped considerably by season three. The story goes, and I don't know if it's an urban myth, that I think NBC was going to pick up the show, but the sets had been destroyed.
I have heard that, right.
Had been destroyed.
What a shame.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Just like Max Wright sucking cock, just to bring it full
fact,
circle.
The orange budget just threw the show.
James Caron said when they were ending Little House on the Prairie, the station wanted to own the set and make a whole new show, and Michael Landon got pissed.
Oh, this is where they blew up the town.
They wrote an episode
Get
where the
out.
Entire yeah. town
they blew up the
is
town.
Blown up. And
oh
they explode every
the...
one of the buildings.
That's
so
great.
They have no set left.
That is spite genius. Work at its best.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of Impractical Jokers, we're going to blow up Murray. That's the plan.
I like the petitions on the show a lot, too, I have to say. The bisexual
the
crossing guard may be my favorite.
Thank you.
Oh, we were running for office with that.
Yeah.
What's coming up, gents? What are you going on tour? You got... Yeah, big plans in the works.
We just started we're taping our second hour special of the tour in a couple of weeks. And so we just started the new tour. And that's constant. So we're away like every other weekend and then twice a year on the bus. And then we actually sold out an arena tour in the UK. It's sold out. It's like 11 or 12 days, but it's not happening until January. So, but we sold it out, which we can't believe. Because it plays over there on Comedy Central. And apparently there's not, I don't know, it's just, they took to it. But we're doing that, and we are making, you know, more television.
So there are going to be more seasons. There's going to be.
We're trying to get the movie version off the ground. We're having great luck. We're having some interior debates as to when to do it. I want time off.
Mm-hmm.
I just want time off.
Is the show kind of all consuming? Is it taking over your lives?
Well, the show and the touring combined take up, I'd say, a large part. And then we'll do other things when we can. Q and I do a podcast called What's
Yeah,
You?
I was going to have you plug that.
You know, we all do our own little projects too and stuff.
Yeah. But it is all consuming because it's Impractical Jokers 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know.
So plug the podcast because it's funny. I heard you guys with a couple of different people.
Yeah, that's how I think this might happen. You're both welcome to come on now. It's called What Say You? We recorded out of my kitchen or on the road. We sometimes do it live. And then the guys and I tour. I mean, you can go to our comedy troupe's called the Tenderloins. That's who we were
right
before Impractical Jokers. It's basically our identity outside of that.
I hate improv groups.
Yeah.
We don't do improv. Gilbert, so do I. I never did improv.
Yeah.
So why did they call when you do research on you guys, they call the Tenderloin sketch an improv, but it never was.
Well,
it never
when we
was
formed
improv.
In 1999. Uh-huh. We did improv from like 99 to 2003.
The sketches are online. I mean, people can find them. They can find Blind Cops. Oh, and
no, we haven't done it. As a matter of fact, we've been not an improv troupe for 13 years and an improv troupe for 4. But I guess that's just kind of how it was. We just say comedy
actually.
Troupe. But, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that.
I don't know. I never did. I didn't do improv with them. I came in when we started doing written sketches.
So we're all in agreement about improv.
I like it. I like performing
you
it.
Do.
And stuff. If it's done right, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen great improv, but and
I like scripted.
Here's it, me too.
Yeah.
And you guys were SNL. You're both influenced by SNL.
Hugely, yeah.
Remember Gilbert's season?
I'm sure.
That was great.
I'll watch it on Hulu.
You watch Gilbert's 13?
Oh,
what were you, 13 or 12?
I think 12. Yeah. I think the 13th, we were supposed to have Graham Chapman as the host, and then it got... The producer got fired.
Gene Demanian got the short haircut.
That was when Lauren was not there, right?
No. Yeah. He had left with the... It was the worst time to be on Saturday Night Live.
What was it like?
Oh, awful. It was like because the original cast and Lorne Michaels had left. And back then, like, how dare you continue it without those people? And it was like if in the middle of Beatlemania, you said John, Paul, George, and Ringo are gone... But here's 4 other guys.
Wow.
So that was hard.
No fond memory at all.
No.
Wow.
No.
You're funny in a few things.
Yeah?
Which?
Yeah. I would be hard pressed.
The sketch you did with Denny Dillon.
Oh.
Where you were the old couple.
Yes, the Waxmans.
The Waxmans. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Denny Dillon, I think the last thing I saw her in was like United Flight 23, that movie about that plane that went down.
Oh, is she in that?
In September, she's one of the passengers.
So I assume when you were influenced by SNL, it wasn't Gilbert's season.
I just had a thought. Can I request you guys get a guest? Do you take guest requests?
Of course.
Yeah.
What do you got?
We've been trying to get Chuck Barris on ours.
So have we.
Oh, my. Yes.
Have you?
Yes,
he's one of my heroes, man.
Okay.
And we've been trying to get him for 2 years.
Okay, there may be a break.
Really?
Somebody on Facebook wrote to me today and met Chuck Barris, I think, a couple of weeks ago at a music festival. So he lives in the tri-state area.
I thought he lived in Philly, but...
Oh, he might live in Philly. There it is.
He is one of my heroes.
See, but the problem with getting Chuck Barris is, of course, the CIA...
Right,
we'll
try and hunt you down, man. That book is genius.
I'd love to get him.
If you get him, can I come? I don't even have to be in it. I can sit
out
there.
Absolutely.
It's a tall order.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote songs, too.
He wrote Palisades Park.
Palisades Park.
Sure. His books are really good, man.
I read his book.
His books are really but he's got several.
Oh, I read
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. This is a big one.
That's the one I read.
He wrote a sequel called Bad Grass Never Dies, which is pretty good.
But somebody told me he just kind of left the business and then checked out.
Yeah,
Murray Langston's around, the unknown comic, if you guys were Gong Show
fans. Paper bag?
He's on Facebook.
No way.
Murray Langston. Yeah, we're going to ask him to come on.
They just released the Gong Show movie on Blu-ray after years of being out of print, and I watched it. It's fucked up, man.
We'll have a friendly competition to see who can come up with Chuck Barris.
You'll definitely win, man. I'm telling you, I go on eBay and I buy signed. I have a Chuck Barris letter that he wrote to Phyllis Diller that somebody put on, and you can buy it for like $20 because you know nobody's not getting tuned with it anymore. But he's a hero, man. I love that guy.
For us too. And Sam Rockwell played a pretty goddamn good Chuck Barris.
Really good Chuck Barris, man.
Yeah. What else you got? So, that it?
Yeah.
Let these gentlemen get to where they have to go?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. I got to go to a...
It's up to you.
I got
to
get going, really.
I've got a lot of masturbating to do tonight,
I'm doing
guys.
An open mic tonight.
We were told you guys were on a tight schedule.
No.
Well, our lives are, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'll go along with it if you need me to. Yeah,
this Garrison, you got to get out of work early. You got to get there by 5:30. These guys got shit to do.
Is this an indirect way of Gilbert doing less time?
Now, I heard on the last cruise, it was a Kid Rock.
On that boat?
Yeah.
That's why your bed smelled like that. Is that what you're asking?
Oh, I think that's not our cruise. This was our inaugural cruise. But that cruise ship and that company goes out with different themed cruises, and they probably had him.
Because they told me, you know, like on that cruise, there are these foreign women like Filipino or whatever who will spray you with hand sanitizer.
Yes.
And I think with Kid Rock, he ordered them. He told the ones in charge that whenever these Asian women would squirt them with the hand sanitizer, they have to say, washy, washy motherfucker.
Yes. It's like Papillon Susu. No.
The Norwegian, the Pearl ship is the name of it, they had a thing, it was a mandate. That they already were saying when they sprayed you, happy, happy, washy, washy.
Yeah.
Now, we know that because before we ever had the cruise, we filmed an episode of Jokers on that cruise ship. And that's how our cruise came to fruition. And we noted that because they were Asians and they were mandating them to say happy, happy, washy, washy, which I thought was extremely peculiar. And what I'm assuming is he took that and he co-opted it and said, say washy, washy, motherfucker. But I thought it was really odd that they were like, say nothing or say, would you like some of this? But to have them say happy, happy, washy, washy,
borderline racist. Right?
Yeah.
I can tie these up. The last topic, you know, you mentioned guests on the want list. Gilbert calls me up one day, or maybe about 50 shows into the run, and he says, I got a great guest idea. You remember the hooker, the girl in Full Metal Jacket that says, me love you long time?
She was hot.
Papillon Susu.
We looked her up. Her name is Papillon Susu. She's got one line in the
movie.
Where
does she live?
Yeah. I think in England.
I think she's a...
Me
I
so
think,
horny, right?
Yeah. Me so horny.
Because when you think about all the great lines in movies like Play It, Sam, or We're Not in Kansas Anymore, all these lines, the most famous is me so horny. Me rub you wrong.
When he pinched her, I said, you don't know if she speaks English.
It would be great, though, if through the whole interview, that's all she said.
That would be fantastic.
So, of course, we put this out there, and everybody on Facebook and all our listeners... You know, some people finally tracked her down. I think she's a chiropractor living in the UK.
I heard at first it sounded respectable, like she became a doctor.
Was she?
And
yeah.
Then it became something
it's
like
a rub and tug in South London.
I like the thought of her talking to anyone in her life post that movie, and they just go to dig at one layer, and they're like, "Oh, so what do you do?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm an actress." And they're like, oh, what have you done? You have seen you or anything? And she always has to be like, yeah, you might have.
How glorious.
You might have seen
She's
me
in a Bond movie,
Full
too.
Metal Jacket. Oh, no way. What'd you do? I was the... I said the...
None of
he's
us.
He's a horn. He's been loving a long time.
None of us in this room, not a single person in this room will ever know the glory of what it's like to have sex with her for the first time after that movie comes out.
Oh, my God.
Like the first
God.
Person who had sex with her.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, she was
God.
Like, I'll do it. It was fun. It was new. She's like, me so horny. That guy had the best. Now.
Oh, well, wow.
Or has she been asked every time and she's never done it because she won't?
No, I think she had to do it the first time to get burned.
Yeah.
Somebody, one lucky guy out there.
Somebody said she did an autograph show a couple of years ago. So, which leads to the question, what is she signing?
Well, yeah. they sampled that line for
Sharpie.
A very popular rap song.
Oh, they've done it.
Yeah. Two Live Crew. Yeah. So Horny is the name of the song. They wrote a song about, you know.
I'll take it a step further. I don't care how old she is. I don't care what she looks like today. I would have sex with her if she did that line.
Yes. No. Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't insane. Care. She could that's look insane. Like the guy who sells Mogwais in Gremlin. And I would still have sex with her if she did that line from the movie. I would.
All right, here's the deal. We'll give you Chuck Barris and we'll give you Papillon.
Oh, my God.
No, please. I have to have Papillon. You can have Chuck Barris attention.
I will
Chuck
leave
Barris
here as
me
a foot
so
soldier for you. I will stop. I will not stop until I get her on the show.
You made my day by showing me that he's still, because I don't know.
He's out there.
He's out there and still alert and still doing it because he's 87.
Yeah.
So you never know how that's going to go. The fact that he's still that out there.
I'll track it down through this guy.
Oh,
who
please
it on Facebook.
Do. Please do.
Okay. If you're out there, Chuck, you're in demand.
And Papillon Susu, call right now. And would you like to do your imitation of me before we close up?
Oh, sure. Nice to meet you, Miss Volcano. Quick question. Is there any way I can do less time? I'm willing to take no less money.
Why don't we let
do we have a deal? No. Can I speak to your husband? Get me to the person who makes the decisions on this ship. Can I speak to the captain? Issue being, no part of me wants to be here or experience any of this. Nice to meet you.
All right.
Thank great you episode, for guys.
Us,
thanks.
Well, thank you for having us.
This has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host, Frank Santopadre at Nutmeg, with our engineer, Frank Verderosa.
Thanks, Frankie.
And we have had on two members of the Impractical Jokers. The other ones, fuck them.
I had a nickel for every time I heard that.
Yeah. They think they're so fucking great. Fuck both of you. Fuck both of you. You think you're so great. You're both pieces of shit. You're untalented, stupid pieces of shit who think you're so fucking great that you can't take 5 minutes out to do a podcast. Fuck you where you breathe. We've had on the only two talented or funny members of Impractical.
Oh, my God.
The only two worth talking to because the both of you fuck your grandmother's corpse.
I kind of wish I didn't come on so we were saying this about me.
Oh, my God.
We had on Brian Q. Quinn.
Hello.
And let's see if I can get this guy's name.
No chance.
Sal Jacrispy Volcano?
Volcano, 100%.
Volcano.
Jacrispy's just a nickname from the show. It's not real.
And we're not going to say the names of you other two because you're shit. Fuck you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
It's been real.
Thank you so much. Oh, my God. Can you, would you have us back? Are we allowed back? Do you
no,
have repeats?
I'm sorry. You could come back as long as you don't have the other Impractical Jokers on, because fuck them.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit.
Brian.
It's been nothing.
Like,
been
you,
nothing
said, like you said,
it's been nothing but a pleasure.
Kid friendly.
Yeah, it's the parrot. Yeah. It's the parrot. It's yeah. cool. Yeah. Got tears coming down my cheeks.
Oh. The next Impractical Jokers cruise is next year, roughly October. Kids, families, come on. Gilbert will be headlining. He'll be doing a quick, tight 3-minute set, filled with 25 cum jokes.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Jafar's Revenge, Gilbert Gottfried.